Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
On WGR.
Mr. Sal Capaccio joins us here on the Western Hotline. Good morning, Jeremy and Joe. Happy Tuesday. 2 days away from a Bills game. They play on Thursday this week, of course, at Highmark Stadium. The last time the Dolphins visit Highmark. And that one, I think we might be able to say more.
That's special.
Well, every time we say the last this, the last that, there's always the playoffs could change things, right? When the Chiefs come, it might not be the last time the Chiefs play at Highmark. When the Bengals come, well, maybe because of the Joe Burrow injury. With the Dolphins, I know they're only 0-2, but 0-3 would be a near-death sentence in making the playoffs, Joe. So we might be able to say the last time the Dolphins come into town.
I'll feel comfortable
for for that stadium.
Yeah.
Sal joins us. Sal, a great rivalry, of course, these two teams. And they've been good the last couple of years. And they've battled it out. And this year, Miami looks like they might be, I don't know, ready to be knocked over and hit to the canvas maybe one final time.
Yeah, you know, you're talking about it, and I haven't really had taken time to step back and think about it. You're right. I mean, the Miami Dolphins, how many times, how many years in that stadium, the rivalry goes back so many years, and I haven't had time to reflect on it this week, but now that you're thinking about it and you talk about it, boy, this is the team that, you know, I grew up, like so many Western New Yorkers, just with such a vitriol hatred for, because they were the team in my youth that beat the Bills 20 straight times, literally the first game of 1970 to the last game of 79. Every single game that started in that was in the 70s decade, 70 through 79. And then the first game of 1980, of course, the Bills win. The goalposts come down. That's one of the, you know, greatest days inside the stadium from a lot of people and all the memories we get. And then they have the big rival with Jim Kelly and Dan Marino. And of course, Don Shula and Marv Levy, and the Bills kind of hold the Dolphins back from what they want. And they beat them in the playoffs a couple of times, 1990, 44-34, one of the best stadiums, one of the best games I ever went to in my life, guys, in the snow, 44-34, right? Pretty crazy. Kelly and Marino, 1990, to get to the first AFC championship game for the Bills, or I should say the second, the first time they won. And then a couple of years later, the Bills go to Miami and beat them in Miami in the AFC championship to hold Miami back. And then, of course, there was a bit of a rekindled rivalry over the last several years. You know, the Dolphins really hadn't risen to the level of the Bills, obviously, but they were in the mix a little bit, and they came here and played the Bills in the playoffs and had a lead in the second half. And the Bills kind of came back and won that game. Boy, yeah, this is it. You're right. This could be the last time ever inside this stadium for a very, very storied rivalry, and one that I think generationally, if you're maybe Joe's age, it's the Patriots. If you're my age, it's the Dolphins, and people, you know, this is the team for them.
And I definitely, even though that's true, I respect the history that's there. I mean, I was just looking, Sal, that they've played 51 times at the stadium, at Highmark Stadium, these two teams. And, of course, you'll know, like, Miami won the first seven at that stadium. And the Bills' record since is 30-14 at home against the Dolphins. And the Bills have not been great in all of those years. I mean, amazing, obviously, some of them. But there's a lot of great wins. I mean, really, that first win against them with the goalposts coming down, right? Like, there's historic wins against Miami in the stadium.
Yeah, and there was another one again later on in the season when they beat them to get to the playoffs, you know, in the 90s and win the division, whatever. And there's been some really great ones. And there's been some tough memories, too. I remember opening game, I think it was maybe, Louis Oliver intercepted Jim Kelly a couple times, and maybe two, maybe three. He took someone back to the house the other way. And then, of course, I mean, the fun stuff that was Brian Cox, right? And the Bills and the fans. And when I say fun stuff, like, it got a little bit, you know, it got too much in some respects. But, you know, it just, like, that's the stuff that you think back when you think about a rivalry in sports and you think about, you know, some of the great moments and things that happen. Like, those are things that come to mind as well. So, no doubt about it. This could be a really interesting night now, considering where these two teams are. And, you know, I think I look at the Dolphins, and to me, they've kind of had their shot a little bit here. and they loaded up a little bit and it didn't work out. And now they're trying to maintain, but they just can't because the roster just isn't built that way. And which is why you see and hear a lot of people in Miami calling for Chris Greer to be fired. It's not a very well put together roster now for, you know, a team that's trying to contend. Are they trying to contend or are they not? They're kind of right there. They're kind of middling it and they're not good enough to do that even. And then Mike McDaniel as well. And the Bills are still not only atop, but maybe even on an ascension the way that they're playing right now. And this is going to be a game where if the Dolphins do get blown out, which is possible considering the spread, you know, people are wondering if those guys survive it. But can they come in here and shock and beat the Bills and turn their season around? Because they would love nothing other than that. And if they could do something like that, it would go a long way.
Yeah, it would change a lot about the way we're talking about this season. I mean, whatever, it'd be a bad game for the Bills, but it'd be a huge upset and a 12.5 point spread. Like, that's on the road to get that kind of win for Miami.
And part of, Sally, you're talking about Chris Greer. One thing I was just looking at as you were talking, one thing that hurts is they, and when you have Josh Allen as your quarterback, you feel a lot more comfortable, right? Spreading money out down the road, committing long term. Tua this year has a $39 million cap hit. That is a higher cap hit than Josh Allen has ever had in a single season. And isn't a lot of that, like, what, you're not on his rookie deal anymore, so it might be a little bit harder. And two, doubly hard, Sal, like, when you're not fully committed to, well, we'll have this guy in 10 years, you have to eat a bigger cap hit on the short term, and that makes it a lot harder, I think, to build a roster.
100%. And, you know, They have some contract that they kind of went all in on over the last few years, and then now they're regretting it, right? Like Jalen Ramsey, when they signed him to that deal, and then bam, right away, they move on from him. And even Tyreek Hill and where that's going right now. And now there's rumors, is he going to be not even on the team, you know, over the next several weeks by the trade deadline and things like that. So you're right, Joe. I think they have a flawed roster the way that they're built. But I understand over the last few years them trying to say, look, this is our shot. We got a quarterback on this rookie deal. Then they had to pay him, and they did. And they tried to get some talent and say, we're going to try and compete here. But I think they're also still trying to compete now without having that same talent. And like you said, now you're top heavy on some guys, and you're really trying to fill the roster with guys who really aren't really NFL caliber, maybe in some spots deep on their depth chart.
Sal Capaccio joining us on the Western Hotline, talking, or just watching the highlights here of the Bucs come from behind win against the Texans last night. The Bucs are 2-0. The Chargers are 2-0. The Bills, of course, are 2-0. On the 10 teams right now sit at 2-0 heading to week 3. All right, Sal, let's get to the Barnes Firm Injury Report, brought to you by the Barnes Firm. Injured for help, call 1-800-8-MILLION. For the Bills and Matt Milano, you know, Sal, he came out and the questions yesterday, like, all right, where did it happen? What happened? We kind of didn't really know. And now we found out it's a pec injury, and the timeline is, a little bit mysterious at this point.
Okay, so, yeah, and this is why you got to wait for information to come out, right? I mean, there was a lot of speculation, and I saw people tweeting videos and calling it hamstring or whatever. We know now it's a pec injury, and we don't know exactly when it happened because I went back, guys, last night, and I watched every snap that I could, that he was out there. He played the entire first half, and he didn't come out in the second half. He could have very well been injured on the play where Justin Fields was scrambling and went for 20 something yards because Matt stumbled and went to the ground, and maybe that's when, you know, his arm hit the ground. But it could have been before that. It could have been after that. I don't know the exact time because there was no circumstance or moment where he came off the field with an injury. So I'm watching last night, went back, I watched the all 22 to identify Matt Milano. There he is. That play happens, he's still on the field because that play happened near the end of the half. He finished the half, and then he did not start the second half. Dorian Williams did. Sean McDermott said, but here's the thing, he was on the sidelines. That's why during the game, we didn't have an injury report on him. I didn't get anything from the sidelines. Tracy Wilson even asked me, and they didn't get an injury report, and we were talking about it. And at that point, it seemed like they were probably just kind of backing off on him anyway. Well, obviously, they evaluate. It's a pec injury. Okay, so let's advance the story. We know that. Sean McDermott says, pec injury, severity unknown at this time. So let's see where it goes, right? I think, again, let's take a step back, wait until we get more information from Sean McDermott. You know, obviously, the The concerning news is this is a pec injury, and that can be bad. And Matt Milano's had some soft tissue injuries over the years where he's had to miss time, including a pec injury before, and where he missed some time, and including a bicep last year where obviously he missed the majority of the season. I would say the encouraging news is never any kind of moment on the sidelines where he was still there. He was standing there. He was with his teammates. So let's see where this goes before we jump to any more conclusions and then hear more from Sean McDermott. And then, yes, tomorrow, Sean McDermott's going to be with me on the Extra Point Show in the morning, and he'll give us an injury report. And even if Matt Milano isn't playing on Thursday because it's a short week, let's find out exactly where he's terming him at that point.
Yeah, I think so. Fans might just kind of knee-jerk too, like, all right, well, we've seen this before where Milano's going to miss some time, and the Bills have, you know, they've managed it well, right? I guess it's sometimes better than others. If he is unable to go, what do you think the linebacking core ultimately looks like right now?
Yeah, so based on what they did Sunday, Dorian Williams is still the main backup to Matt Milano. Now, Shaq Thompson was not active for the game, if I remember right. Shaq Thompson was inactive, right, because they brought up Keontae Jenkins. But he would be also in the mix there. But I think Dorian Williams is the guy that...
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Just steps right in if that's the case, especially on a short week, especially with Shaq Thompson dealing with a little bit of an injury. But I do think Shaq Thompson's an option there if you need someone also to be able to play, because he can play every linebacker position. But it's Dorian Williams who would step in, and Dorian Williams played fine last year. He was the team's leading tackler. I think we've seen the difference between Dorian Williams and Matt Milano, which is Dorian Williams can play like his hair's on fire. He can make tackles, and he's a guy that I think the game is getting a little slower for him. But Matt Milano really processes things so quickly, identifies things so quickly. We know how really fantastic he is at getting – I mean, he was really good in the first half. A few of the plays he made in the first quarter where that's vintage Matt Milano. So you're still looking at Terrell Bernard in the middle, and you're probably looking at Dorian Williams at will, unless Matt Milano can play. And then Joe Andreessen's still the backup middle linebacker. And we'll see where it goes with Shaq Thompson this week if he's able to play.
Do you think, are the Bills kind of more conservative this year with injuries, Sal, than others? Or is this pretty normal where, I guess I'm thinking about the Taron Johnson injury. Like, it seemed like he would probably play. He doesn't end up playing. There was some stuff in training camp and preseason with them holding guys back. Do you think on a short week that it would be expected that they would opt on the side of being conservative if it's close with Milano?
I think it would be for anybody on a short week that you have to think about these things. But I think, Joe, that's why last week, maybe that's why you did see Taron Johnson not play, because he was a limited participant yesterday. If the game is if the Bills didn't play Thursday this week, I don't know this, but maybe Taron Johnson plays on Sunday last week, right? Maybe it's, hey, we got a game in 4 days. Let's make sure he's fully healthy, because then you have another 10 days before the next game. So instead of cramming 2 in 4 days, you can get two in – you can really two in however many days you want to rest there. So 3 weeks, right? Mm-hmm. Basically. So yes, I think the answer to your question is, I don't think in a broad sense that they're more conservative with injuries, Joe. I think this week is a different type of week.
Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. Josh Allen's nose is kind of a joke around the facility, right? Like, I think they're having fun with it more than they're concerned about it.
I guess so, yeah. I don't really know. I was with Bobby Babich and Joe Brady yesterday. Is that some of the word from some of the other guys
that
spoke?
Just like
I
saw Spencer Brown make a comment like, his nose isn't too much bigger, and Sean McDermott said that as well. So seems like there's not...
I do remember McDermott did say that. Well, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. But yes, it's more of a, it sucks, but you know what? He's Josh Allen, and you know what? He'll go out there and play and be okay. So, you know, I think about when it happened, I asked Eric Wood, like, a guy calling signals, right? I mean, what's that going to do? And he's like, well, it'll sound different, but, you know, as long as he can breathe, obviously, that's, you know, the main thing. And he's going out there. And obviously, Josh finished the game.
Yeah.
The other injury, Sal, Taron Johnson started the week limited, right?
Taron Johnson started the week limited. And just want to make sure I get this right for you guys. So did Cam Lewis. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's your two nickel corners, right? Remember, Cam came off the field a little bit. He got a little banged up at the end of the game, but he finished the game. At least he was on the sidelines. I don't know if he actually finished on the field, but he was on the sidelines, and it looked like there's nobody like around him. But actually, guys, I'll go a step further. All three of their nickel corners are banged up if you count Jordan Hancock, who I don't know if you really want to call him a nickel anymore. He's mostly a safety. Jamarcus Ingram came in for Cam Lewis in that spot last week, but Cam Lewis, Taron Johnson, both limited. The good news is Jordan Hancock, a full participant, and I'm excited to get Jordan Hancock to back on the field in some capacity to see what he's got. Remember all that talk about him and safety and Cole Bishop? And I think Cole Bishop had a real nice bounce back game, but the more Jordan Hancock can get involved, the more Jordan Hancock can play, you know, the better off the Buffalo Bills are going to be as having another nice depth piece.
Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline ahead of Bills Dolphins, which will be Thursday. We'll see injury designations and reports from both teams soon, and you know, get to a short week. Sal, you have a favorite memory at the stadium, Bills Dolphins? As we talk about, this could be the very much the last game between these two in that building. Is there a, whether it's, you know, a game that's important or just a personal moment where you're there for it?
I think I have to go back to 44-34 first and foremost. I mean, as a senior in high school going to games, when the Bills went to their first Super Bowl, that was my senior year in high school. I mean, Kelly Marino, go back. If you ever watched a game on YouTube, go back and watch that 44-34 game. I think it started off with green turf. And like by the end of the game, it was a snow-filled, covered field. And they were still just throwing the ball all over the place. And it's Kelly and Marino going at it in a duel. And it was great. I remember that one. As a professional covering the team, I have to go back maybe to Tyler Bass's walk-off field goal on a Saturday night a few years ago, right?
Yeah, Bills wearing the red, red jerseys, right?
Yep.
The snowball game, as I remember.
That's
it
correct. It's also the Bill Vinovich game. You guys know the story, right? With Bill Vinovich and what happened. I think I've told you the story before, right? Okay, so here, Bills fans, unfortunately, there were some Bills fans throwing snowballs. You guys remember that, right?
Okay, yeah. Now I think I remember this. But yeah, tell the story.
And people were throwing snowballs. So Bill Vinovich is refereeing the game on a Saturday night, national television. He walks over to the Bills sideline. He sees me. I have a microphone on my hip because I'm the radio network sideline reporter. He apparently thinks I'm the PA announcer for the Bills for the Highmark Stadium.
Uh-huh.
And he walks up to me and says, "Can you please announce to this crowd to stop throwing snowballs?" And I said, "Sir, I am not the PA announcer. I am the radio sideline reporter." And Bill Vinovich looked at me like I was an alien from outer space, like he had no idea what I was talking about. And I'm like, I'm trying to explain. I show him. And I have pictures that people took of me explaining this to Bill Vinovich, showing him my microphone, like, I can't do that for you. So he wanted me to make that announcement, but he actually wound up making the announcement to the crowd to stop throwing the snowballs. But he thought that I was the PA announcer, and it's amazing to me now when I think about that story again.
Now I remember that game as that's one where they kept announcing, "Please stop throwing snowballs because we'll penalize the team." But they can't actually do that.
It was a bluff, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. I feel like that was part of that story. Like, you just threaten and you can't actually do it.
I don't know.
I remember that.
I also remember I got hit with a snowball that game, and I gave it an arrow down. In my arrow up, arrow down column, my arrow down was whoever threw a snowball that hit me in the back of the neck.
I remember someone hitting Steve Smith, who was there for NFL Network, with a snowball, and he was ready to climb into the crowd. That is not
terrible.
The person you wanted to be doing that to in the first place.
Well, and then the following March, I see Mike McDaniel at the owners' meetings. Mm-hmm. And we just started chatting, and I said, "Hey, I know I'm the radio network sideline reporter for the Bills," and blah, blah, blah. And he goes, "Hey, tell your fans don't be hitting me with snowballs." And he was kind of joking. I said, "Coach, I got hit with a snowball, and I'm on that sideline, right?" Yeah. I mean, like, I get it. The point is, don't throw anything, right? Yep. But yeah, that was the snowball game, and all that stuff started happening. The Bill Vinovich thing is just something I'll always take with me. It's one of those moments that you're like, oh my God, like, I can't believe that happened to me.
And the 90 divisional round game you mentioned, 44-34, I just pulled up the box score. So, Kelly, 339 yards, 3 touchdowns and a pick. Marino, 323 yards, 3 touchdowns and 2 picks. Yeah. That's a duel.
Speaking of this,
it was awesome, man.
Sal, one thing, you're going to remember this, and I don't know, Joe, if you know this, like Joe, Owen, Joe, these guys are young on the. I just looked it up to make sure it was true. Sal, you remember back far enough back in the NFL where they used to penalize teams for crowd noise?
Yes, that happened for like maybe 1 year, maybe two.
1989. Searched. In 1989, it was against the rules. Like, if your home crowd was too loud, disrupting the other team's offense, they would penalize
you. I've seen clips of this, and it blew my mind.
Yeah.
I'm like, what do you mean, like, they're going to penalize them? Like, I didn't know that when they must have changed it at some point, what, in the 90s?
You could revoke timeouts or assess 5-yard penalties for persistent noise.
Okay, well, Joe, what happened was, it was like a 1-year thing they did. It wasn't that that was just the rule all the time.
Oh, okay.
And throughout the '80s, like, you can make as much noise as you want. And then one year they came out and said, guess what? We have to have both teams be able to hear, so we're going to make this rule. Yep. So like one year they had this rule, and everybody's like, this is the most ridiculous thing ever. Everybody paid their money to go to the stadium. They should be able to cheer, right, and loud,
right,
and help their team. So they went away with it. What I remember about it, I'm not kidding, there was a commercial that they made, the NFL helped make. And there was, you know the song, it goes, sit down, sit down, sit down, sit down, you're rocking the boat. You ever hear that song? Right? There's a song. It's anyway, they have a song. There's, I don't know who made it anyway. And the NFL did a commercial, and it had this song, sit down, sit down, sit down, sit down, you're rocking the boat. And it had a bunch of the, it had footage of quarterbacks telling people to settle down, like when they do in their home stadium. You know what I mean? And it was like the message to tell people via a commercial, hey, when you go to the game, make sure you're a little quieter.
Yeah, right.
Brutal.
Absolutely crazy that that happened. Yep. All right. Thank you, Sal.
You got it, guys.
Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. Bills Dolphins Thursday, 8:20. Right? 8:20 is the official. Should I know?
It's. I hate that Monday night, Sunday night, and Thursday night like all start like 5 minutes a difference.
That's
like 8:15, I think, is Sunday night football, but 8:25 is Monday night. I'd say I don't even know.
Okay. Yeah, Thursday night's 8:15.
8:15.
Last night, Sunday night football is 7 o'clock and 10 o'clock, so that's a different one.
Right.
Sunday night football is 8:20, Thursday's 8:15.
Okay.
I think it's what we're looking at.
Gotcha.
So there you go. Yeah. 8:15 Thursday night. Bills Dolphins.
Sunday night's 8:20, Monday and Thursday are 8:15. There. Yeah. Now I got it.
Forever.
Hopefully forever.
I'll never forget.
Sunday's 8:20 and the other two are 8:15.
8:03, 8:05, 8:50. I have instant trivia for you when we get back and a revisitation of a poll from training camp about Joey Bosa. We'll see where we stand on that right now. Jeremy and Joe, give us a ring. Wide open phone lines for you. You want to pop on about Bills Dolphins memories? We'll take those as well. It's a beautiful Tuesday here on WGR.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
You know why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.